Hello, everybody. Hello, hello. This is Joanna Lindenbaum, and I am just so excited for our workshop today. It's more than a workshop. It's an experience and a circle. And what we're really here for today is to reclaim Eve and to initiate the revolutionary leader within. As we get started, I just want to say that my heart is so happy to have all of you here. Nearly 150 people registered for this workshop, and of those 150, about 150, many of you are new to me and to this community, and I'm so excited to welcome you in, and I'm so happy that you're here, and I'm so grateful to be able to share with you and to connect with you. And so many of you, nearly two-thirds of you that are here that have registered, have been with me in the past, either currently or even way back to working with me 15 to 20 years ago. And I just want to acknowledge that. For those of you that are new, my heart is open to you. And for those of you that have been with me before, I just want you to know my heart is so open to you too. I'm so grateful for our connection. I'm so grateful that you continue to commit to our work together. It means so much to me. So we're going to be together today for about 2 hours. We might go just a little bit over. I'm going to try for that not to happen, but the truth is that I have so much to share with you. there's enough content here for a three-day retreat. So, you know, this goes against everything that I teach facilitators, everything that I teach in curriculum lab around less is more. But I think the way that I've created it, it will still, even though we've got a lot, you'll be able to integrate and you'll be able to integrate and you'll be able to integrate. We're going to be in sacred space together, and we're going to go deep. We're going to do deep personal work. So I will be speaking a lot because I always have a lot to share, but this isn't about me lecturing at you or teaching at you. This is very interactive. For you to receive what you want and need here, you need to do the work. So it's going to be very experiential. And throughout our time together, as we do the deep personal work, I'll share a little bit about how to apply this to your own clients and workshops and your own situations. It's not going to be extensive like I do in Sacred Depths, my coach training, or Into the Depths, my facilitator training, but what I share you'll be able to run with. And I may also even, after we're done, do a little bit of a Facebook Live and give you some more on that. But either way, through the personal work that we do together, you're going to gain so much awareness, not just for yourself, but about your clients' needs, your clients' issues, about human behavior in general. And all of that is going to help you greatly as you show up for your clients and your group work. I want to invite you as we step in to eliminate distractions for the next few hours. Really make this a sacred space for you. Give yourself that gift. So often in our days, we're distracted by emails and social media and all the things. For the work that we're going to do together today, the more present that you can be, the more that you'll get. All right. So we're here to activate more deeply our inner revolutionary leaders. So what is a revolutionary leader? Well, I asked this question in our Facebook group for this workshop, And there were so many incredible descriptions that instead of giving you my description, I'm actually mostly taking from pieces of the wisdom that you all contributed. This community is amazing. So this is what a revolutionary leader is. It's someone who is unapologetic, someone who's passionate, someone who's willing to speak the truth when no one else is, and willing to speak that truth at the expense of being liked. A revolutionary leader is someone who takes a stand for something and sticks to it despite opposition from loved ones and haters alike. A revolutionary leader is someone who trusts their own inner authority instead of looking to others to lead the way, to make the rules, and to determine what is good and what is bad. A revolutionary leader is someone who takes action that is against the grain and doesn't feel shame about it. It's someone who knows how to move and activate people to take action towards shared and important goals. A revolutionary leader is someone who is guided by wisdom and spirit to approach things differently and in a way that captures people's minds and hearts. So that all sounds pretty easy, right? Maybe not so much, because of course, if you're here, you know that we get blocked to accessing and initiating our inner revolutionary leader. And this is what happens when we are blocked. When we're blocked, we don't take the action that we're inspired to take. Those actions that we know in our hearts will express our truth, our authenticity, and help us reach our goals. When we're blocked from our inner revolutionary leader, we may actually get to the point of taking the actions, but if we do, we end up feeling guilt or shame or fear about them. We spend a lot of time and energy beating ourselves up or feeling fear about the consequences of our actions. When we're blocked to our revolutionary leader, we can get stuck in a ping-pong game of wondering, of questioning, of going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth about decisions that could help us move forward. We end up sounding like everyone else in our industry without our unique or distinct voice, and then we wonder why we don't get as noticed as we would like. When our revolutionary leader is blocked, it's harder to move ahead in our work in the ways that we would like. Sometimes we end up taking actions that feel wrong or out of integrity or misaligned for us. When our revolutionary leader is blocked, we play it safe. We worry about what others are thinking of us. We feel cut off from our inner knowing, from our unique ideas and our unique expression. And this is what I'd call our genius, right? Each of our geniuses. When we're blocked from our revolutionary leader inside, we have the feeling that our power has been taken away from us or that we've given it up. We don't feel fully empowered. So why is it that we get blocked? Why do we get blocked? Well, the biggest reason that we get disconnected and set apart from our inner revolutionary leader is because of shame. Shame. When we're in shame, we've decided, consciously or not, that a part of ourselves, that a trait or a characteristic inside of us, that a decision that we've made or an action that we've taken or a thought that we have had makes us a bad person or an unworthy person or a person who deserves to be hated or unloved or punished. we get blocked in all these ways from our revolutionary leader because of the fear of being bad or because of the fear of embarrassment or because of the fear of bringing shame and embarrassment to those we love or because of the fear of not being loved or because of the fear of being judged. Or because we're scared we'll get punished for who we are. So how does all of this happen, all of this shame and all of this fear? Well, if you're here, you probably know why. It can happen a lot of times because of messaging from our families of origin. Even if there's a lot of love coming from our families of origin, sometimes those messages get a little messed up, right? Or it can come because of messaging from friends or from any other connections that we've had, any other relationships that we've had as a child or as an adult. That shame and all of those fears can maybe show up because of messaging from society, from religion, or from culture, right? So all these ways, from our families of origin, from our relationships as children or as adults, from society, from religion, from culture, all of that messaging. And of course, all of this relates to Eve. To the first story of shame, to the first story of the bad girl, of the woman punished for wanting more. So later in our time together, we're going to get deep, deep into the details of Eve's story in a very different way and in a very new way. But for right now, I'll just share for those of you that maybe don't know very briefly that the story of Eve, Eve was the first woman put on the face of the earth alongside with Adam, the first man, in the Garden of Eden, this beautiful place. She's told not to eat from the tree, from a special tree. God tells her, don't eat from this tree. She eventually eats an apple from the tree, and she is banished. Her and Adam are banished from the Garden of Eden into the wilderness to fend for their own and supposedly to be in pain. So this one act that this woman, Eve, took, that she made a choice to eat an apple, created the original sin. Now, stories like this, whether we intellectually believe them or not, seep into our cells. They seep into our DNA. They seep into our collective unconscious. These stories take root inside of us. They energetically and they archetypally inform us. They impact us. And this story of Eve has become, in a way, a script, a narrative that has become installed not only in our personal psyches, but in the psyche of society. And those narratives, they need to be rewritten. We need to rewrite the narrative that women are the source of original sin. We need to rewrite the narrative that metaphorical nakedness, that vulnerability and transparency and being truly seen are shameful. We need to rewrite the narrative that when we make decisions for ourselves, when we exert our free will, that it's a sin. We need to rewrite the narrative that if we give into our curiosity and if we choose knowledge of and experience over naivete, that we are disqualified as being a bad girl. We need to rewrite even the narrative that we can't have mature knowledge and naivete at the same time. We need to rewrite the narrative that when we disobey the rules, that we must be cast out as awful sinners into the wilderness. The narrative that individuation is wrong. The narrative that there's something wrong with our genius. And the narrative that Eden is better than the wilderness. What if even that were a narrative that's ready to be rewritten? So this is our work for today. It's big work to get to the next level of undoing all of these narratives so we can have more freedom, more self-love, and so that we're not ashamed to claim our genius and express all of who we are. Now, I just want to tell you personally that every single time that I have chosen to consciously eat the forbidden fruit, you know, that metaphorical apple from the tree, every time I've chosen to do this consciously in my personal and in my professional life, it's brought me so, so much. It's been such a gift, and it's brought me to my next evolution of self. For those of you that know my work well, you know that it breaks rules. I won't go into all of it right now, but, you know, I became a ritualist back in 2001 before ritual or women's circles or any of that or new moon circles were in vogue at all. I was one of the first people to speak out about the coaching industry and some of the not-so-integrity things that were going on there. I was one of the first people, and really still am, to focus less on all of the slick marketing out there and more on bringing quality work to our clients. Not only to do our work in the world, but to build our businesses through that good work. And I'll tell you, every single one of these acts and others has allowed me to step more and more and more into my leadership, into my freedom and my own agency, into my ability to make impact in the world, and into my prosperity. But I will also tell you this, none of these decisions or actions were easy. They weren't easy because of how I was impacted by my family story, by my family history, because of how that history impacted my beliefs and perceptions about myself and others. When I used to take these forbidden fruit actions, I would get myself to be able to take them, but they'd be dripping with guilt, with shame, with fear of being outcast, or even burned at the stake, or worse, with the fear that the action would prove once and for all that I am simply bad. But the more that I've worked with Eve, with the pieces and issues that we're going to be looking at today, not just intellectually working with them, but energetically working with them, then the less guilt, the less shame, the less fear, the less stalling and stalling has come with these actions. So again, this is our work for today. We're going to be doing a lot of inner work. We're going to take it step by step. The work today isn't going to be focused as much on finding answers to outer steps that you're going to take. That's going to come next, but first we must do the inner work and the activation work first, and this takes time and this takes practice. You would have by now come up with all of the outer step answers if it was simply a matter of thinking on it or thinking it through. We need to do the energetic work first in order to open the pathways to the outer step answers. And so that's what we're going to be doing today, embodiment work, reclaiming work, activation work. you're going to walk away holding the energetics of all of this story and this legacy that we've been talking about very differently. And all of that will lead to more and more and more of you knowing, to more and more and more of you claiming your genius, to more and more and more of you taking your revolutionary leader action. If you have worked with me in the past, you know one of the things that I say all the time is that transformation is a process. It's not a once and done. So, you know, we all love breakthroughs, and breakthroughs are amazing, and I know there's going to be breakthroughs in our time together today, but a breakthrough is different than transformation, right? A breakthrough is a new awareness of something. But to create transformation, to create true change, you need to apply the new awareness from the breakthrough persistently and consistently until new patterns are created. So today, we're going to poke holes at all the narratives. We're going to activate. We're going to have breakthroughs, and we're going to start to move towards that practice of transformation. But it is a beginning, not an end. I do want to share that there are some places that we go to today that may feel tough. Or there might be things that, especially if you haven't worked with me before, may seem weird. We're going to do ritual. We're going to do ceremony. We're going to do embodiment. We're also going to be doing a lot of writing, so get your wrists ready. So I just share all of this to say, check yourself if you go into resistance. If you notice that you want to check out, if you notice that you want to check your email, if you notice that you're saying to yourself, I've already done this work, you know, I don't need to do it again, any of that, what I want to invite you to do is to stay open, especially if you hear something and you think you already know it. I tend to attract smarty pants women to me. You guys are so smart. You're so wise. You're so intuitive, and you've already done so much work. And it's so easy when you've already done so much work to sometimes close your ears and not receive the next level. I really want to invite you to go deeper. Open your ears today. It's a step-by-step process. Okay, so all of that said, I want to ask you some questions. And you can journal on your answers. So, or not journal, but kind of jot down some answers, I would say. So first question, why do you desire to initiate your revolutionary leader? Take a moment and jot down some answers to that. Why do you desire to initiate your revolutionary leader? Take one more moment with that one. Next question, what are the ways that your revolutionary leader has been blocked? At least that you know so far, and we'll find more today. But what are the ways that your revolutionary leader has been blocked? Maybe when it comes to your work, you haven't been able to find your voice. Or there are actions that you want to take that you simply haven't allowed yourself. Or, you know, like I shared earlier, you do, but you're in constant fear. And because of that, you're not doing it fully. Maybe there are things that you've wanted to speak out against that you haven't, or take a stand for that you haven't, or things that you've wanted to do differently. But because it's an industry norm, you just stick with it. What are the ways that your revolutionary leader has been blocked? And then last question for this moment. I want to invite you to get clear on what is your intention for our time together today. What's your intention for our time together today? An intention can be an outer piece, like to learn more about my revolutionary leader. Or an intention can be have more of an inner flavor, like to show up with full presence or curiosity. So for you, what is your sacred intention for our time together today? Write that down. And I asked you all to bring a candle and a match today. If you didn't, no worries. It's all okay. I'll be lighting a candle for you if you don't have one. But if you do, I want to give you a moment right now to really set that sacred intention. Whether you have the candle or not, I want to give you a moment to set that sacred intention that you just wrote down. If you have your candle, you can light your candle in dedication to that sacred intention, and also in dedication to your revolutionary leader. If you don't have a candle, you can simply put a hand on your heart and set that sacred intention for yourself. Really set the intention on your heart or on your candle. And I'm going to light a candle for all of us right now for this circle. And with this flame, we honor and we remember our mother and her mother and her mother before and all of the mothers and the grandmothers and the sisters and the aunties and the friends all the way back to the first woman, to Eve. We honor all of the women who lit flames to connect deeply to their own souls. We honor all of the women who lit flames to warm their families, to feed their communities, and to see themselves more clearly in the light of the fire. We ask that those women be with us here today. Okay. So from here, we're going to start to look a little more deeply. And we're going to start on the intellectual level of learning and transformation. I teach a lot about this in my coach training and Sacred Depths and the facilitator training, that we need, in order to learn and transform, we need four different levels of learning and transformation. We need our intellect. We need our brain involved. Which is where most people go, but you'll see today we're going to start here at the intellectual level, and then we're going to move to the heart level, to the spirit level, to the body level. So let's start here. To start to unpack some more around our coding and our patterning. I told you we were going to do a lot of writing today. So, first journaling question. In what ways have you been encouraged to be your own person and make your own decisions and speak your own heart? What are the ways that you have been encouraged to be your own person and make your own decisions? Take a minute with that. take another couple moments. What are the ways that you have been encouraged to be your own person, to speak your own heart from your family or from your culture or your present-day relationships? Next question that I want you to consider and journal on: in what ways have you been encouraged to not be your own person or make your own decisions or speak your own heart, whether it's from your family, your culture, or any other relationship? In what ways have you been encouraged to not be your own person, to not make your own decisions, to not speak your own heart? Take a minute with that one. And again, for those of you that have done a lot of inner work, and you've probably done some of this, for those of you that have worked with me, done it even with me before, go deeper. See what else you can find here. Or connect in with what you already know in a deeper way. We'll take another 10 more seconds or so, 15 seconds with this one. Next question that I want you to think about and journal on: what belief were handed down to you about having the freedom to become your own person? What beliefs were handed down to you about having the freedom to become your own person? These might be beliefs that were literally told to you, or they may have been modeled in one way or another by parents or people of authority or others. What beliefs were handed down to you about having the freedom to become your own person? Take another few moments with that. Got a couple more questions. How and in what ways were you told, subtly or not subtly, that you are a bad girl or run the risk of becoming a bad girl? How and in what ways were you told, subtly or not, that you're a bad girl, or that you run the risk of becoming a bad girl? how were you told that you were a bad girl or could become one? Directly or indirectly? Next question, and you may have already answered some of this earlier when I was asking what is blocking you, but let's see if some more wants to come up here. What are the things that you're currently doing that are inauthentic or just conforming to others' needs? What are the things that you're currently doing that are either inauthentic to you, they're not aligned for you, they don't feel authentic, or it's like you're conforming for someone else? So what are the things that you're currently doing around that? Or maybe you're doing the authentic thing, but you're feeling shame or guilt or fear about it. What are the things that you're doing that are aligned that you feel shame or guilt or fear, right? And take a minute with that. So what are the things that you're doing right now in your life, in your work, that are inauthentic, that are about conforming? Or what are the authentic things that you're doing, but, you know, because of all of these things that we're looking at, you feel shame or guilt or fear about them? Really take a look at all the details. Get granular on this. And then last question for now. What would be at risk for you if you were to fully step into your genius and your revolutionary leadership? What would be at risk for you if you were to fully step into your genius and into your revolutionary leadership? What relationship would be at risk for you? What sense of self would be at risk for you? What item or object would be at risk for you? If you were to fully step into your genius and into your revolutionary leadership. Give you a minute on that. What would be at risk? Okay, let's take a pause here. I've been doing a lot of talking so far, and I'd love to hear from some of you. So I'd love to hear what's coming through for you in these journaling questions. What are you seeing? What are you learning? What's feeling important from the journaling questions or just from anything? that we've looked at so far. It's star 2 to raise your hand. I'd love to hear from one or two of you. Rebecca.
Hey, Joanna. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm really good. This feels perfect.
Good. What are you seeing?
Well, one of my experiences is that I've really experienced, like, the birth of the revolutionary leader inside of me, and then in terms of, like, taking action around it, I feel like just big things.
Wait, Rebecca, can you speak a little bit more into your phone? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Yeah. I said I really felt the activation of her within me and in terms of, like, before this call, in terms of the revolutionary leader. And what's coming up for me in terms of my own life is that, like, activating that kind of presence, like, shifts things a lot. And
yeah.
It's, like, pointing to actions that I didn't really expect that I would want to take, that I really want to take. And I'm just the thing that's come, like, how dare you? You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
How dare
yeah.
you think that you could do that? And, like, it's like, so I've been in this space for the last week where, like, I think I do know I want to presence myself in a new way, so I'm not really rushed, you know, but I do, I'm, like, kind of toggling between, like, a new kind of presence, like, being able to step into that, and also, like, yeah, being able to take actions that are kind of, like, how dare you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that this is coming to your awareness,
yeah.
because it's, like, usually the how dare you, you know, rises up inside of us. And we just kind of, like, either it makes us cry or we just stuff it away. You know, we pretend like
yeah.
it's not there. But I'm glad that you're allowing yourself to be present to it because
cool.
that's what's going to be part of what's going to help shift it. Really beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah.
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Who is this? Your last numbers are 1762.
Hi, this is Esther.
Hi, Esther.
Hi. I'm so glad that you bring up this topic. It's been something that's been very current for me for a while. And what's coming up again is how I am sensing that the revolutionary leader is very innate for me. It's very much
mm-hmm,
part of my
mm-hmm.
DNA.
Yes.
And who
yes.
I am.
Yes.
But also something that I have very much wronged myself for. And whenever I step into it, feeling that a sense of unsafety. And I've stepped into it more, especially being very vocal. And there was a time growing up where I almost lost my voice because it was communicated that it wasn't safe, and I actually have past life memories around it.
Mm-hmm.
So it, even my husband, because we have these discussions, it's when I see things in my environment or at work and I feel compelled to speak out
yeah.
or speak up, even my husband will tell me, well, why do you have to be the fall person?
Yeah.
Why
uh-huh.
do you have to take that on? So there's very much still a sense of danger and what could I lose? Everything,
yeah.
my family, my
yeah.
friends, my work family. So, yeah, it brings up a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I'm glad that you're able to sit with it and be in that awareness. And I have to tell you, when you said that you're aware that the revolutionary leader has always been inside of you, that it's a part of you, I got chills. It feels like you're starting to really become aware of such a vital and important part of you. And anyone who is here on this call, you wouldn't have been called unless it is a part of you. It's already a part of you. So I like that it's starting to get a little bit activated so far.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yes. Thanks.
Good, good. Thank you. All right. There's a lot of hands up. I'm going to take just one more share for right now. Who is this? Your last numbers are 3114.
Hey, it's Anna.
Hi, Anna.
Hi. one of the things that popped out for me that I wanted to share is just seeing a belief in a new way that's been holding me back. And it was, I can be my own person to a certain point. And I was seeing that message of, don't leave the family, but if you do leave, always come back. Because I've been very brave, you know, in moving around the country, traveling, and not really participating in my family of origin all that much. But I can feel that belief that at some point I'm going to be called back.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is that going to mean if you'll
right.
be called back?
Yeah, if I'm called back, then anything I create that's just my own or that's too revolutionary for the family or that I can't continue inside that box will just be lost anyway.
Yeah.
So it keeps me from, like, I get everything started, but that pushing it over the finish line and really becoming visible, it's like if I become too big and I'm known for something totally different that doesn't fit back where I'm going to be called, then I'm betraying, you know, an agreement of some sort.
I'm so glad this is coming up for you because, you know, when it was in your blind spot until a little while ago, you had no choice around it. There's nothing you can do about the belief. It's just kind of there, leading the way. But now that you're seeing it, you have more choice around it.
Yes.
Beautiful. Good. Thank you. I want to hear from everybody whose hands are raised, but there's so much more I want to share today. So for now, I'm going to lower hands, but we're going to have more times throughout for sharing. And anything you guys want to post in the Facebook group, I will respond to every piece. But for now, I want to keep on moving forward with this process. So hopefully through the work that we've already done, you can see how the narratives have seeped in. You can see how the stories have seeped in and created certain patterns. What I want to start to do, what I want for us to start to do together, is to rewrite the story. To install the energy of Eve inside of us, of that revolutionary inside of us, in a new way, in a healthier way, in a more empowered way. And so I'm going to tell you guys a story. I'm going to tell you the story of Eve from her point of view. I did take a little creative license, but honestly, the story that I'm about to tell you isn't my creative license. It's the story that Eve has been wanting to tell. It's going to take a few minutes to tell this story, so I want you to settle in. And I really want to invite you to stay present to it. Your ego might want to distract you, but don't disconnect. We're stepping into something really important here. Let the story take you to your next place of where you need to be. Here it is. Open your ears and listen. I have a story to tell. Open your ears and listen. This is my story, and it's yours. It's your story, too. I am Eve, the first woman ever to walk this earth. The mother of all humankind. God created me, formed me, gave me life. God took a rib, straight from Adam to form me. God said that Adam and I were created in God's own form. While I never quite understood exactly what that meant, what I do know is that God didn't exactly want me to have my own form. With love and with care, God gave me and Adam a home in the Garden of Eden, a lush, beautiful, majestic place where every one of our needs were met. We didn't have to lift a finger at all in any way. God took care of everything for us. Every need or desire was filled before we even realized we had a desire. We lived in Eden, sheltered from the wilderness, until, of course, the incident with the tree. The tree of knowledge, as God called it, it was on the far end of the garden. The tree was by far the most beautiful, most colorful, most sweet, smelling and tantalizing, most alive thing in the entire garden. The apples on that tree were, well, they were not to be ignored. They had a life force to them. You could feel it from all the way across the garden. Now, here's the thing. God told me and Adam not to eat from this tree under any circumstance. In fact, God's exact words were, "You may freely eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of knowledge you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you shall die." If I ate from the tree of knowledge, I would die? Oh, okay then, no eating from the tree, I thought. Even though it really did call to me many times, but I certainly didn't want to die. But maybe even more than that, I certainly didn't want God to be angry with me. I didn't want to disobey. I didn't want God to see me as a bad girl. And so day after day, night after night, I moved through Eden and avoided that tree. Until the serpent came along. That serpent, with its sensual movements, with its undulating energy, and the way that this serpent spoke to me, God had never spoken to me in this way, had never spoken to me as a person who deserves to know the truth, as an individual that can think for her own self and make decisions about what she does or doesn't do for her own self. Did you know that the first person on the face of this earth to ever speak, to ever utter a word, was me? It wasn't Adam. It was me, Eve. And those first words that were ever spoken were spoken in response to the serpent. The serpent told me that I could eat the forbidden fruit if I desired. The serpent said, "You will not die. For God knows that when you eat of this fruit, your eyes will be opened." My eyes will be opened. My eyes will be opened. My eyes will be opened to what? I all of a sudden became aware that there was an essential part of myself I would find if I ate from the tree. Oh, those apples were calling to me. But what about God? What would God think of me? What would God do to me? What if this strange new feeling inside of me, could it be desire? What if it's not to be trusted, my desire? What if my desire needs to go away, needs to be hidden in the shadows? What is this impulse inside of me? Why is my heart desiring what my caregiver has told me to look away from? Does this impulse make me bad? Does it make me evil? Does it make me a monster? But the snake looked at me and again said, you may eat the forbidden fruit if you desire. Your eyes will be opened. My eyes will be opened. I will claim my knowledge. Yes, I want that. Plus, I am pretty hungry. And so I did. I ate the apple. I put the forbidden fruit from the tree of knowledge in my mouth. It was utterly delicious. It was sweet, so sweet, but also tart and even bitter in parts. As I took each bite and I felt each bite move through me, I started to feel different. Almost as if something got ignited inside of me, a spark, a knowing, a feeling that for the first time I was truly myself, in my power, free, and very much alive. I thought Adam might want to feel this way too, to experience himself this way too. And so I simply walked over to him with the apple and asked him if he wanted a try. No temptressing, no seducing, inviting. I ate the apple on my own free will, the first true act of free will I had ever taken, that any person had ever taken, and I wasn't going to steal that opportunity from Adam. He accepted. He ate the fruit. And he smiled. And then noticed it. I noticed for the first time that Adam and I were naked. I was naked. I was allowing myself to be fully seen by him, by everything around me. And I was fully seeing my own self. You would think that this would be amazing, to reveal myself fully, to be fully seen, to see myself. But it wasn't. I felt shame, extreme shame, self-hatred. I quick found a leaf to cover myself, to hide myself. I didn't want the real me to be seen or known because I knew God would find out and see how terrible I am. And God did find out and punished us harshly. In the exact moment that I needed my caregiver's love, my caregiver's trust in me, I was met instead by the caregiver's wrath, by the caregiver's judgment. In that instant, Eden was no longer accessible to us. We were banished from the garden. At first, the wilderness felt isolating, like a punishment, like a curse. I felt embarrassed and hateful of every part of me. Do you know what it's like to hate every part of yourself? It's a lot to hold. Outside of Eden, in the wilderness, Adam and I found that we couldn't live in a childlike state anymore. We worked hard to prepare the land and grow our food. We made our own shelter. And this is what happened from all of that. The curse turned out to be my greatest gift. My creativity, my genius was activated as I figured out how to survive, how to innovate and make life better and better. My respect for myself was activated as I enjoyed the fruits of my labor. My confidence in myself was activated as I saw that I could withstand the pain of childbirth. My satisfaction in life was activated as I became the mother of all of humanity, the woman who started it all, the leader of the biggest revolution that ever was. The truth is that even though I was banned from Eden for the rest of my life, only in my weakest moments did I ever even want to go back. Better to be free and fully myself in the wilderness than pretending to be something I am not in the Garden of Eden. It is said that my eating the apple from the tree of knowledge is the original sin. But I see it as the moment I finally became alive. I had felt shame when I first realized I was naked in Eden. But now I bask as I run naked through the fields of the wilderness, claiming all of who I am and revealing myself to the world. So take a moment. Let that settle in.